Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I'm an SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have TalkCast every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. And the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com. And search for call ID 17702 or SFU on call or Starfleet Universe on call, and you will find us there. Now, if you want the best online experience, you want to go to Twitch. Yeah, twitch.tv. So go over to twitch.tv/SFU on call. You'll find us there. You'll be able to join the chat room and enjoy hearing my lovely voice and see my lovely face. Hopefully, it won't crack your screen. And enjoy hanging out with everybody there. I mean, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall at gmail.com. Also, you can follow me on Twitter while it still exists, or X, whatever you want to call it this week. You can follow my podcast account at sfuoncall, or you can follow my personal account at Paul Franz, P-A-U-L-F-R-A-N-Z. There's no T in there. And of course, also there's Franz Games, F-R-A-N-Z-G-M-E-S. Again, there's no T in there. And of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from AWB this week. Steve Petrick is still hardworking on the Orion Master Starship book. Also, there should be an update for Gumbo's Attack. It should be available on the E. Taylor's. Definitely, I would hope at least Watch Out 23, because that was supposed to... Steve sent it to Gene last week, so it should be up by now. I did not check that, so just to let you know, I did not actually confirm that. And I didn't see any announcement on Facebook, but I did see it as part of the company blog on the discussion board. Now, found in the online store for this week is the Battleships Armada Unity. It's going to be $16.95. There are over 60 starships, adding battleships, dreadnoughts, transports, and tugs to your fleets. There are also 9 star bases to add more defenses to your systems. These are for the Federation, the Gorn, the Hydran, the Klingons, the Zenith, the Lyrans, the Romulans, the Saturnians, and the Tholian Empires. The Winds are not neglected in this, as they get their light tactical transport with and without cargo pods. Now remember, this is the Starmada edition, so you will need, at the very least, you will need Klingon Armada to start off with this, because this is not a complete rule set. You need the rule set for Starmada first. This is an additional book to add on to that. Now, moving onward and forward, when it comes to SFB Online tournaments, yes, the Sapphire Star 15 tournament signups have been opened. We've gotten 10 out of the 16 slots already filled, so if you want to be part of that, do it now. Now, also a reminder, when it comes to Starfleet Warlord is going to has a new game, a new Die Hard game starting this weekend. If you're hearing this on Friday or Saturday, well, you ain't got much time, because it starts Saturday. And I'm going to be getting it all set up on Saturday, not Sunday, Saturday. Now, of course, I do allow for late entries. I allow for up to 3 turns. And that this time is going to be 6 weeks. So obviously, that means if you don't sign up, don't start immediately, you can start a little bit later, but then you have to get caught up on the turns. I figure three turns after that, then you're going to start running into people. So up to that point, you do not have to worry. I mean, you won't be running into people, and therefore there shouldn't be any issues with collisions and all that kind of thing. This is, just a reminder, this is also another anonymous game. So people's names will not be announced who's who on that. Moving onward and forward, when it comes to the library report, no movement there. I do have some ships from Frank. I've got to go and actually put those, add those to the library. And I have announced to everybody and said, okay, I'm going to take over the general units just because of, I'm, be honest, I'm just tired. I'm tired. I just feel like they're not getting, people are not getting exactly what it means to have a general unit and have the race refits. And I know the Empire's gene, I call them race refits. Give me a break. And for that, get the refits correct. And I don't want to keep on fixing them. So I said, I'm going to take them over. That's one thing I probably will be working in the next week or so, which is correcting them, updating them, make sure, making the refits work the way that they were designed to work. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one and only Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we actually have Barry, we have Jeff. Say hi, guys.
Hey!
Hi.
And
hi.
Yeah, and we actually have Doug alive and well. Well, alive.
Hello. Yeah, someone alive. The well part is coming along slowly.
Yeah, that's the. Hey, as I said earlier, I'm glad at least it didn't land on your head.
Yeah,
that would have hurt.
He only what you broke your hip and you broke your leg, right?
Probably would have hurt less than what happened. Oh, guys, let me tell Jeff the saga, if you don't mind.
No, don't mind.
It's about a 4-minute saga.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. All right. Well, hit a life goal this last weekend, sort of, in that I finally convinced Sweetie. And she did it to consolidate the 3 storage units that are inside units and the price units going up and up and up on them into one larger outside one that's super cheap, like less than a third of what we're paying at the moment. So
okay.
We get a bunch of friends together and we do all that. And at the end of it, when we're standing at the new storage unit, there's one piece I didn't put in. And I thought, I can just go now. Because it was the middle support piece for a Home Depot style green screen setup that I built 20 years ago. All the other pieces had it trittered away. And, you know, and this was the last chunk of it. And we're talking like, you know, big base plate, heavy base plate board. Heavy boards going from the base plate up to the board going up that holds the PVC piping and so forth and so on. So,
right.
Yeah, yippee, it's heavy. It's annoying. It has no place in my life. The green screen itself didn't survive the last move, so if I'm going to do it again, I'll just do the whole thing from scratch. So we decided to say goodbye to this old pal, took it to the apartment complex, went over to the big red dumpster that you threw furniture out in. And did I do the smart thing and open the door to the dumpster? No. If I did that, we wouldn't be having this conversation. No. I didn't open the dumpster and chuck it in. And bear in mind that today's effort was probably like multiple weeks worth of effort that I would put out. I'm just exhausted at this point. And, you know, like you said, in the military, a lot of the post accidents come from fatigue and bad decision-making brought on by fatigue. Oh, yippee. So, at any rate, I'm standing there and I go, okay, time for you to go bye-bye, Mr. Old Buddy Pal. And I chuck it towards the top to get it over and in. The bottom part disagrees with this and catches the lip of the dumpster and flings itself back. Directly at me. Now, Mr. Fraser couldn't make it go left or right or slightly off. No, straight back at me. And
did it scream bonsai?
I'm honestly surprised that this thing, I was able to jump out of the way of it. So that's not the part that did the damage to me. No, what did the damage to me was I leaped in the air. I went several feet up, and I either dragged my sandal doing it or I caught my sandal wrong coming down because I ended up twisting a little bit. And instead of my fat ass bouncing off the ground, it was my pointy hip bone that literally caught the ground.
And ow, ow,
my
ow,
femur
ow.
On the spot. Oh, yeah. Now, if you think that's bad, the story's not over yet. So,
oh, no.
I'm sitting there. Actually, I'm laying there going, ow. And I'm thinking pleasant thoughts like, wow, that was the bone break that was the beginning of the end for my mom a decade earlier. But she was 77 going to 78 when she did that. And basically, I said, okay, time to get up. And I sit up, and I cross my legs. Apparently, these are both things that you were not supposed to do in this situation, because that was pretty much exactly what my body told me right on the spot when the adrenaline started to wear off, and I found myself laying back on the ground again. Now, you think it's over? No, it's not over yet. So, I'm laying there, looking up in the sky, and I think Sweetie May pointed out that, there's a hawk going across there. And I'm looking up going, yeah, honey, that's a hawk. I'm watching this thing go from, the right side of the sky to the left side of the sky. Because beautiful, beautiful evening sky. It's not dark yet. The sun is in that right spot where it's lighting up the hawk with a nice golden glow and all this stuff. Really pretty. If I had my camera with me, I might have taken a picture of it.
Right.
But that was not exactly my focus at the time. A few seconds later, Sweetie says, oh, by the way, there's a vulture up there. I'm like, oh, really? Yeah, it was flying in a straight line, and now it's turned and it's circling. Oh, okay, honey. Let's try and get me up a few times. And when getting me up a few times utterly failed on its face, my attitude changed very rapidly to, F you, Mr. Vulture. You're not having dinner today. Honey, call the ambulance. He called the ambulance. The vultures did not get fed from that dumpster. So basically, on Sunday, they did the operation, and I got a titanium ball and socket thing done. Did a full hip replacement on the left side, and I'm doing the rehab thing right now, waiting to go be releasable. So. But yeah, it says some people are released like within a few days of it, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not that old. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the saga. How's your day?
Of course, I've just been playing around on the highways in Montana. I was just thinking though that after this, you need to get the sound effect from the $6 million man as your text for your phone text. Every time you get a text message.
I remember that show. Yeah, that was painful. And it still is painful because they're putting me on like oxycodone, but it doesn't really do that much when I start to move. So my pain level tends to be 0 or 10.
Wow.
Yikes.
Take your pick. It's one or the other. It's barely in between. So. Talking with the rehab people, there should be like a sudden drop and all that soon. So, as my body gets used to everything.
Surprised.
So that was my weekend.
Yeesh.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay.
And here I am talking to you guys.
Yep.
your dedication to the podcast is laudable and appreciated.
Yeah.
Probably better talking to us than talking to the nurses.
I don't know. The nurses might be better. Never mind. He's married. I can't say that.
Oh, yeah.
No, you cannot.
Nurses are a lot cuter than you guys. I'll say it. They're a lot cuter than you guys.
Well, I can hope so.
Yeah. Agreed.
Certainly hope so.
Agreed.
Most of them.
Hey, Gary. How you doing?
And I have no
one. Hello, everybody. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you.
Yep. Hey, Gary. Hi, okay. Gary.
So I just kind of like called in just halfway through the trip to Romulus. But sorry to hear about the bad encounters with various, Romulan warships in disguise, of course.
I kind of snuck up on them. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Well, it's because they actually have the thing in the Romulan source book for Prime Directive where they talk about all these birds that the exiles found on Romulus and Remus. And they're basically the inspiration for the big birds of prey that they paint on the ships.
Mm.
So there's like a hawk creature that's on Remus, and there's a eagle and a kestrel and a vulture that are on Romulus. So maybe you're actually spotting those by the disguise, and they had to try and silence you.
Yeah, Doug, you shouldn't come around here. We have quite a few turkey vultures always hanging around.
Yeah, that's fine.
Well, I have some dogs that would be happy to help hunt them.
So,
leave the carnivores out of this.
Yeah, I think your dogs would have a hard time climbing the outside of the houses to get to the vultures. They're usually hanging out either in the trees or on top of the houses.
No. They're very good after you shoot the vultures.
Ah.
They fall to the ground because they can't fly anymore. The dogs are very good about bringing them back.
Oh.
But just to get the record perfectly clear, I have nothing against the vultures. I'm just not feeding them today.
Oh, so. Understood. Understood, Doug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand.
It's Saturday.
Oh, and speaking of Montana, I was wondering if
I'll take the diagnosis of any vulture over any doctor any day.
There's a difference?
Food, glorious food.
Yeah, the vultures are usually right. So there you go.
I forgot the movie that is from.
I was just going to say that if one of you is in Montana, then you could swing by Bozeman and see where the Vulcans are going to show up in a few decades.
Actually, I am in Montana tonight. Mm-hmm. I went through Bozeman earlier.
I'm surprised they haven't already set up a touristy thing saying,
I'm sure they have. I don't know if COVID killed it or not, but on Highway 41 on the way to Calgary in a little town called Vulcan in British Columbia, Alberta, they've got a museum complete with a Starbase themed building and a giant concrete cinema class Enterprise. You can see from the road.
Mm-hmm. Actually, reminds
me. Actually, I have a town called Vulcan.
Yep. Actually, it's a town called Vulcan.
Wow. Yeah, I was actually looking at my Mastodon feed, and actually, someone posted the picture of they've got the United Federation of Planets, the flag for it, and across the street, his neighbor put up the flag for the Klingons.
I've seen that.
Of course.
Yeah.
There is a small village in Canada on an island, and it's a mountainous island. It's called Rivendell.
Oh, geez.
And I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't that great. It was like, whatever.
Right. Well,
they tried.
They're not going to duplicate Rivendell from The Hobbit or, the Lord of the Rings series. You know, they're not going to be
Lord of the Rings. I know.
Yeah, you have to go to New Zealand for that.
Yeah.
That is true. That is true. Yeah, and that was something I had discussed at one point with my wife of flying out there just to go there. Never happened, though.
Well, these days you can get a Hobbit Hole B&B, Airbnb.
Mm.
Oh, there you go.
Well,
they popped up all over the place.
I spent the night in New York in Alaska earlier this year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yurts, 10 feet of snow back then.
Yurts are underrated. Yurts are very, very utilitarian shelters. Really good. Most people don't understand exactly how good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was in Lycoma County, Little Pine. The campground, they had a few small yurts there, which was nice, you know, for those people. You know, we stayed in our trailer, and my little teardrop, enjoyed it. We're trying to get out with the trailer one more time this year in October, and I'm not sure whether we plan on heading down south to Maryland or heading up or heading west, because I was talking to a fellow knight of Columbus, and he said there's a nice place a little north of Harrisburg, up in that area above Harrisburg, that has some beautiful waterfalls.
Mm.
Yes.
Do they glow at night?
What's that?
There's some parts of.
Do they glow at night?
Do they glow at night? I doubt it.
No, not that part of Harrisburg, no.
Well, it's your own lights, they might.
There are some parts of Western Maryland that are very beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one place I was thinking about going is Elk Ridge, which is the first place I ever went, truly went camping, and taking the trailer down there. Because I know the place that actually has decent hiking trails, and it's Maryland, so I like Maryland. So.
Yeah.
And
you were originally from there.
Yeah, exactly. Maryland still feels like home, you know. No matter how many years I live up here in Pennsylvania, Maryland still feels like home.
That's nice. Because when I go back to New Jersey, it's like I barely recognize the place. It's like that ain't the home I grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
It's changed so much.
Oh, understood. Well, for me, it really quick, which is my mother continued to live in Maryland until she died. And I actually saw it slowly changing over the years. Around where I grew up, so it wasn't like a big shock going back there, and it was nice, not bad. Of course, around here they're starting to build it out a little bit. Jeez, houses around here expensive as all get out. It's crazy. But anyhow, after being all just chatting away for the past 20 minutes. We probably should get to an actual topic of the Starfleet universe. Something a little closer, than just mentioning that we saw a almost a meme quality pick on Mastodon.
Have you already decided this topic, or are you open to suggestions?
I had originally decided on a topic, but that topic might go out the window. Because I just realized there's one part I did not set up beforehand, which I should have set up for the. I was going to kind of demo Starfleet Warlord, running a turn, how entering the turns, and all that kind of thing. But then I realized there was part of it I forgot to get set up. So I probably will skip it for this evening and do it next week in that case. But I definitely will be doing a demo of Starfleet Warlord, how the turns are run, even a little kind of behind the scenes kind of thing. Just for the plain simple reason that since to get the output of a turn, I need to run the turn, in which case I'll be running it live, and people actually get to see what the engine looks like. Now, it's, I mean, it's old, as in, as I mentioned in past podcasts, that the Starfleet Warlord engine was originally written, well, it is written in Clipper. So, you know, and
what?
Yeah. And I still compile it.
What language?
Clipper. You know, database 4, that kind of thing.
Clipper. Ashton Tate DB 4?
Yep, that one.
Oh my God. I used to program on that.
Yeah, it still works.
In the 1980s.
Yep. And there is a open source version called Harbor. And Harbor takes basically Clipper and it will compile it into an actual executable. It works quite well. Invariably what I have to do with Harbor is I actually have to compile Harbor itself. So then I can compile the Clipper code to create an executable. It's always
the process with you.
Yeah. Hey, but it works. I've got it running on FreeBSD. I've got it compiled and running on the Mac, and I also got it compiled and running on the Windows. So I don't think I've actually tried doing it on Linux yet. Yeah, there's certain things I had to do for like FreeBSD. I had to turn off a lot of stuff. I don't use it, you know, because it has additional offers that you can actually link into, like sound and all this kind of other things. There's actually quite a few nice modules in Harbor to do some really nice stuff. If you like Clipper, the programming Clipper, it's like nothing. But there's certain things that you have to keep an eye out for, which is if the variable is not declared at all, it crashes. But I'm sure, Barry, you remember how DB4 is. That is, for a variable, if a variable doesn't exist locally in the program, then it will check to see if that variable is basically a column for the currently selected file.
Okay. It's literally the last time I touched it was in the 1980s.
Oh, understood. But you know, yeah, it does that now. And then the problem is with Harbor is that it compiles it, and then if it hits a variable that has not been defined either as a private variable or it's not a column in the actual selected file, it crashes. Which is understandable. You know, the old Clipper actually would just say, okay, well, it's a local variable and use it that way. So I have not had to run into a problem for a while when it comes to the engine, when it comes to crashing like that. The only time it crashes at the moment is if I try to use a standard game and they actually want to use GIFs, as in gifting EAPs to the different corporations. The actual files that are used for that are different. The different when it comes to the DBase file. Anyhow, getting past all of that. Anybody have a topic, or will I be selecting one myself?
I could. I was actually going to say, since Barry's here, I was going to ask one of two questions. One is, did you, Paul, get a chance to finally show any of the Zosman Marauder stuff from Captain's Log to Barry, or the Omega Paravian stuff for that matter?
Oh, I forgot to grab. Sorry.
I have not. I have not seen anything from Zosmans.
Yeah.
So
Gary wanted me to bring it with me to Gamers of Summer. And didn't write it down, so I totally forgot about it because I was so focused on getting everything prepared and ready for the tournament that I totally forgot about it. I'm sorry, Gary.
Sadly never happened.
Yeah, but still, it doesn't mean I don't have to prep for it.
Did you say before, Barry, that you you only collect PDFs now?
I just do PDFs. I do not do paper.
Okay. So if it helps, both Captain's Log 50 and 52 are now available on Warehouse 23. And between the two of them, they've got all the current material that's in playtest for the Zosmans. So rules about the stealth field and six SSDs between the two issues, and also an update file that tells you like what their operating zones are and which Omega weapons they have access to and so on. So there's not enough time to do it now, but in the future, if you were interested, then maybe at some point down the line, you might want to, would you want to have a look and see what you think of it so far?
Paul, can you send me email to my work email or just a text saying, hey, remember to look up this Osmond Captain's Log 5152 and 23.
It was 1552, right? Okay.
1552, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, 50 and 52.
Okay.
And also, well, 54 is not up on PDF yet, but when it is, it actually has a set of four SSDs for the Paravians of Omega. So those ships have their regular weapons swapped out for anti-proton weapons.
Yeah, and 54 won't be available until 55 is available.
That's so that might be a while. Well, it's worth keeping an eye on, nonetheless.
Yeah, well, they're trying to work. They're working on it, you know. Also, they're working on the Orion Master Starship book. And there was actually updates to Gunboat's Attack, which I noticed on the discussion board. That was supposed to be sent to Gene. This was last week, and then Gene was supposed to upload it. Now, I have not gotten notification, but I'm not sure if Warehouse 23 still does notifications on updates. I assume it does, and it either got sent out and I deleted it, or it got sent out and it got spam foldered, or Gene did not get around to uploading the updated Gumbo's Attack yet.
So as an alternate topic, Barry, there's a thing that Paul and I and the others have been talking about off and on, like in recent episodes, and that is basically, like, you know, historically the Tholians showed up in Alpha and they lost particle cannon, so they ended up stealing disruptors,
right,
and later getting photons from the Federation. So we were basically discussing, there's a thread on the BBS if you want to have a look, and basically it's trying to figure out what would the Tholians look like if the sphere had crashed into Omega rather than Alpha. Like, what weapons would they acquire, and how would their technology evolve differently, and how would the Sartorians evolve differently too, like, once they show up? So, since you're around and you've had a fair look at some of the weapons that we were discussing, I was just curious as to the ones that we had in mind, how you'd think the Tholians would work well with them or not in an Omega context.
Right, and that's on the BBS, you said.
Yeah,
that's correct. There's a separate topic for Tholians in the Magellanic Cloud, but the Omega one might be easier because the Magellanic Cloud doesn't have an energy barrier. So if the Tholians don't like what they see, they might end up leaving again unless you give them an excuse why they can't. But in Omega, once you crash through the barrier, the sphere is immobile, the same as in Alpha. So they have to bed in. So, and the idea was basically, if you look in the Omega map early enough, there's either a left or right option in terms of where you would put the Tholians and which technology they would get access to, as depending on where they are. So basically we were going through on previous episodes, which is the more likely scenario to make something interesting, and what would the technologies be, and even for things like fast patrol ships, because as you know, in Omega, the PFs have different engines than in Alpha. So if you had Tholian or Sothorian PFs with those engines, how differently would they fight compared to the PFs that people know about in Alpha?
It's not a small problem.
Yeah, it's not. And the one thing that we was mentioned, I think at least once or twice, which is, of course, the effect of the Tholians being actually in the Omega Octant instead of the Alpha Octant. And, of course, one thing that we definitely did discuss, which is, where did they land? Depending upon where they landed, you know, it could be very difficult, you know, because the very border of the of the Omega Octant when it comes to the whatchamacallit?
Galactic Rim.
Galactic Rim, thank you. Which is right here for those of you actually looking at the video. I brought up the Y-100 map, where basically the singers are on their lonesome, surrounded by empty space, which no one has declared is theirs. And of course, there's the little bit between the Sigvarians and the Chlorophon. There's a piece there, and of course, L'Oreal are right beside there, right below the Caligar.
the L'Oreal were fun. They really were.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Now, one thing from the looks of it, actually, in theory, the Galactic Rim could have gone out a little bit further on the map. I'm not sure if the Chlorophon would went all the way to the Galactic Rim or not. Or Singvarians, also same thing here in L'Oreal, because you don't actually see the Galactic Rim on the lower border of them. But one thing that we had presupposed is that it would probably the only one that could actually work in game terms would be, at least in my mind anyway, was right to L'Oreal, where it was empty space before you run into the singers. Now obviously you could be a little bit farther left towards the Yolanda Huss or Avari Combine. But at the very least, there is open space along the Galactic Rim that the Tholians could arrive at and be relatively safe from immediate attack
for a little while.
From the other empires in the Omega Octant.
So what I was thinking, at least, is if you go for the Western scenario, the earliest direct fire weapon that I think is reasonable for the Tholians to get a hold of would be the tachyon gun, because the Mesrons eventually take over Chlorophon space, and then they attack and destroy Sigvarian space. And so, but their hold in the area is relatively weak because they've vastly overstretched themselves. But it would be close enough to a mini Tholian holdfast, whatever, so that the Tholians might be able to capture samples of tachyon gun technology. And I think the tachyon gun is good enough that it would basically become the Western Tholians' primary weapon. They wouldn't need a secondary weapon. But on the Eastern side, it was brought up that here on the BBS as well, even actually. That I can't remember who to give credit for. Definitely not me, because someone else gave credit. So, But the idea would be that since the Tholians would be in a relatively empty area of space, they could either have the time to reverse engineer particle cannon technology, and then particle cannons become their primary weapons in Omega. Or if they come into contact with the Iridani early, they could acquire the focused energy beam. Now, they can't use the target illuminator because that's exclusive to the Iridani. But the Fed by itself might be an interesting weapon for the Tholians, not least because you can use phaser capacitor power to arm it. And in that circumstance, they might still be able to get the tachyon gun later in the timeline as a secondary weapon, the same way that they get the photons from the Feds historically. So, particle cannon, because the Varier may be too far away to get the particle beam. But historically, the reason why they lost the particle cannon is because they were too busy with the Klingons to be able to
take the
particle cannon that they had. Yeah.
Right, that was a Sel-Kerian weapon. That was a Tholian weapon, too.
That's right, yeah.
Yep.
So in the historical timeline, things were too hectic with the Klingons, so they were never able to take one of the ships that had the particle cannons out of service long enough to reverse engineer the weapon. So that's why when they ran out of those ships, they had to steal the disruptor. And I would assume that in the Western scenario in Omega, the same thing would happen, so that by the time they lose all their particle cannons, they'd have to steal the tachyon gun. But on the Eastern side, if there's no one to bother them, then they could take the time to reverse engineer the particle cannon and then use that going forward. But then the question I would ask you is that if you compare the tachyon gun and the focus energy beam to the particle cannon, in the context of a Tholian ship using those weapons, either against the Saltorians or against anyone else the Tholians might have to fight, like the Soldier or Andromedans or anything like that, or the Zosman Rot Club. We'll have to leave the Zosmans for another day. But basically, which of those three or four weapons would or would not be a good fit for the Tholian ships that we know about in place of disruptors?
Right. Well, focused energy beam is kind of interesting. I have to look at it again. Particle cannon is a fairly weapon. Tachyon guns are interesting. I like tachyon guns. Their primary opponents would be the Soldier or the Andromedans, right?
Well, in the Eastern side, they'd probably have to deal with various pirates and stuff. But later in the timeline, before the Andromedans and Soldier show up, presumably the Saltorians would show up themselves. And also the nearest borders from the Vari and Alunda would be creeping towards them. I think, for example, do you have the map open in front of you, or are you at a computer? Or
I do. Well, I...
No.
Okay. So,
I think the tachyon gun would probably be the best bet, or the focused energy beam.
Uh-huh.
Sense itself.
But the handy thing, too, is that most of those weapons already have rules for their fighters, too. So if or when the Tholians develop fighters, they'd basically be able to use the same kind of system that other empires do. But the only thing that would be a problem for the focused energy beam, because the Fed on a fighter, it can't arm itself. So every fighter that has a Fed, it actually has to have a double pod-sized module that holds the charge. So, for example, if you've got a fighter that only has two pod rails, both of those pod rails get taken up by the Fed charge, and then you have to fly back to the carrier to have it rearmed for you when you're fired.
Yeah. Well, drones are not a thing in the Omega, which is in the Alpha, the most common and primary weapon for fighters is drones, which obviously in Omega you can't do.
Yeah, well, the Tholian has never used drones either.
That's true. But they had disruptors.
Right.
But again, I don't think their fighters, You fighters can't rearm and disruptor charge, is that correct? I haven't played fighters in a while.
So the Hivers, fighters are really frigates.
Well, you can recharge. It just it requires going back to the carrier to, you know, use a crew action to reload the...
Yeah, no fighter can reload its own heavy weapon.
But that's if the Hiver barb, because basically the Hivers see them, their fighters, as miniature starships. So they actually have they generate a certain amount of power each turn, and you can use it. You don't have but you can use it to rearm its weapon and stuff.
And doesn't Hiver fighters also have shields? Don't the Hiver fighters have shields too?
You can give them that, yes. And actually, the Eordani eventually reverse engineer a shield module based on it. And then other empires get a hold of it too. But I think it's only like one box shield for anyone who's not the Hiver. So. But if the Tholian, although actually speaking of fighters, here's another thing. So another aspect of Omega for the Tholians and Sultorians would be fighters too, because in the Alpha Octant, the fighters that the Sultorians use, not only are they exported by the Klingons, that's why they have drones on them, but the pilots are Klingons, or they're Klingon subject species, because the Sultorians are not capable of flying their own fighters. Like their psychology or whatever, their physiology, they just can't process the 3D or whatever it is. Like they can't fly fighters, basically. So in Omega, it would be the same thing. So if the Sultorians show up in open space, unless they can find like a local pirate or mercenary faction to fly their fighters for them, like the Iridani or Blasco or Zosmans or something, then they won't have fighters. But in a scenario where they're close enough to a major empire like the Prober or something like that, who, lease them fighters, then you've got the issue of, okay, well, if they do acquire fighters, do they then develop particle cannon versions of them? And then even if you don't give particle cannon fighters to the Tholians, you'd have to sit down and think, all right, well, what does a particle cannon look like on a fighter? And, or if not, do they just use phaser fighters? So that would be an interesting thing too, where you've got a very different dynamic, fighter versus fighter, with the Tholians on one side and whatever fighters the Sultorians are able to acquire on the other.
Guys, I need to head to sleep because I got a very early wake up tomorrow.
Okay.
Yep.
In the mail. See you, Barry.
Okay.
It's been fun, Barry.
Bye.
Okay. Da-da-da-da-da-da. I was wondering if...
I feel like that was more of a setup for a future episode than... But I guess getting to talk to Barry is relatively rare these days, I'm afraid. So.
Yeah, it's a...
I guess that's your time.
It's a rare thing. Oh, okay. That's what happened. They crashed.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Don't mind
that. So, on a different topic, on the BBS, there's a discussion. I think Mike West posted a thread, basically looking at what different PF tenders the feds would need in those alternate timelines where they use PFs.
Right.
So, and I was basically kind of like putting an aside to that in terms of like what additional X-ship PF tenders or heavy fighter carriers they need as well, because historically they would need F-111 or A-20 carriers with special sensors so they could go after the Andromedans. Sorry,
right.
Paul. But in the alternate timelines, they would use PF tenders for that mission the same way that the Klingons or Romulans or ISC would do.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a discussion that Mike was bringing up in terms of which PF tenders he'd like and also which ones ADB would actually bother with, because they're not in too much of a hurry to approve too many of them. So when it comes to the X-ship in particular, because one issue that the feds have is that even in this historical timeline where they're using F-111 tenders to go after the Andromedans, they don't really have a good X-ship light cruiser, except for the heavy war destroyer that's in Module X-1R. Because the Federation DDX, it's big for a destroyer, but it's still a destroyer. And they have an X-Tech version of the new heavy cruiser, but it's still a new heavy cruiser. So there's not the equivalent of like a Sparrowhawk or a Klingon, what do you call it, D5X that mm-hmm. they have, that is relatively easy to convert into either a carrier, a heavy fighter carrier, or into a PF tender. So then the question would be, do they just build more heavy war destroyers than everyone else and then use them for this mission? Or do they build more new heavy cruiser carriers or tenders and use those instead? Like they basically lean on their bigger economy to pay the extra money to build the bigger ships to do the same thing that other empires would do with their X-Tech light cruisers.
Yeah, I was trying to find it, which is, I assume you're talking about the missing Federation PF tenders.
Yeah, it's like near the end of that section for the Federation proposals. There actually is a thread I set up about a year ago in that same section where I actually forgotten about it because I had requested heavy fighter and PF versions of the NAX, the Federation New Heavy Cruiser X technology. But I kind of re-got back to that same point. And then I looked in the threads and saw it, because like, do I have to set up a new thread? And I was like, oh, wait, no, I already did. So, but because I don't have module R10, and I don't have my copy of R11 to hand. Do you have either of those available, Paul? Or?
No. R10?
Are they on the... okay, so do you have them... in the client.
What's the ship?
Okay, so there's two ships. They're non-X ships that exist historically. One of them is in module, I believe it's module R10. It's the NHVX. That's the F-111 carrier. And in module R11, there's the NHAX, which has A-20s instead of F-111s. Now, they both have a couple of special sensors, but I don't remember if the ships have photon torpedoes on board or not, because like some of the other equivalent fed heavy carriers, whatever, they'd still have two photons, but they'd have maybe two or special sensors replacing the other two photons, if that makes sense. Because if they have no photons at all, they're not very good for going after the Andromedans.
That is true.
Since if you've got the client up, I just wanted to see if it said,
yeah.
Do they still keep at least some of their photons or not?
Okay, the Fed. What was the ship?
The F-111 one is NHVX, and the A-20 one is NHA. Oh, sorry, what am I saying? X. Forget I said the X bit because that's the one I'm requesting. I'm a complete idiot. NHV or NHA.
Okay, okay, I got NHV and NHA. I got those ships. The heavy fighter carrier. Okay.
Yes.
Where it has two photons and two sensors, and that's wow. That's interesting.
So,
where
are, in the discussion thread?
I'm looking for the shuttles. It's like where's the shuttle bays? There's two shuttles.
Well, the heavy fighters would be installed on fighter mech links. So they wouldn't be internal.
Ah. Okay, so they'd be attached to the tractor beams. And
yes, the tractor beams would be refitted.
Oh,
to be
that makes
to,
sense. Okay.
The fighters.
Okay, that makes sense now. And that cancel. Selection mode. This one up. That and this. Go. Oops. Clicked on the wrong thing. There, and just delete so I can see what's behind it. Right. So there was, okay, six. Okay. So basically, what you're saying is that, you know, we're questioning whether, when it comes to the Federation, when it comes to if the Federation ever had PFs, whether they actually would use the Federation new heavy fighter carrier in place of it being a heavy fighter carrier being basically a PFT.
So, there's like, okay. Historically, if you look at the SSDs you see there, or the client versions of them, rather,
mm-hmm.
I would argue that you could maybe argue in favor of having one each built to X technology standards. Because there are, like, for example, the Romulans have an X technology version of the Firehawk E. And it was built as a once-off, but it turned out to be very useful against the RTM. So the feds, I think it'd be interesting to have, at the very least, have one of each two so that they can do the same. Mm-hmm. But yes, there would basically be two ways of approaching it for the PF option. One is to have a non-X version of the ship, which would basically replace the cargo with repair boxes and would install PF mech links instead of fighter mech links.
Right.
And, or you could also build an advanced technology version of it. And now Mike Weiss wasn't impressed with the non-X potential because he'd say that there were other non-X PF tenders that would be better for the feds. I don't know about that, but I would say that an X technology version of it would be useful because there is no competing move cost two-thirds ship except for the X heavy war destroyer that the feds can use instead.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'd say that even if there's no use for a non-X version, which I would dispute, but I'd say that there is, proportionally speaking, more of a use for its X-Tech counterpart, if such a thing, if such a ship would ever be made to exist.
Yeah. Understood, but of course, then it comes down to, okay. Now it comes to a historical note, i.e., how long after they figured out that the, you know, about the RTN and how basically how to hunt it, how long did it take it to destroy the RTN?
Well, I guess it see part. Okay, so in the historical timeline, it was discovered in Y-195. At least discovered in the sense that it was reported back on, because, as you know, when the Darwin disappeared, that knowledge was brought with it 12 years into the future, where it no longer mattered.
Right.
And then they had to try to make it back through the time rift again. But in the historical timeline, the information was passed along, and then the various surviving empires in the Alpha Octant had to spend a couple of years figuring out how to use that technology, because it was not immediately obvious how to go after the RTN, at least in a way that meant that you were destroying more satellite bases than the Andromedans were putting new ones.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's why you needed to have, they eventually realized that you needed a carrier that, or a PF tender that was itself powerful enough to not be splatted by a Dominator or an Intruder or whatever, when it discovered the node.
Right.
And that was actually fast enough to get to the node to stop the Andromedans from picking the base up and moving it elsewhere. So that's why X-ships that had their own special sensors, that also had their own heavy weapons and had their own heavy fighters or PFs are such a good option for that, because they ticked all those boxes at once.
Mm-hmm.
And once that happened, the network was mostly gone by about Y-200, and that allowed Operation Unity to become a thing.
Right.
So, but then in the alternate timeline, it wasn't until Y-200 before the network was discovered, and by then it was too late. Like, the Andromedans were too powerful to catch up the difference in terms of being able to defeat the network with the ships that the empires had surviving versus the ships and the resources that the Andromedans had built up by that point. So, in terms of why these SSDs would be useful, the PF tender ones, One of them would be to use in that dark timeline, because in that version of history, the feds basically become desperate enough to use gunboats starting in Y198.
Right.
So, but then, if you recall, I believe you were speaking on the podcast before about module R4J.
Right.
And in one of those timelines, you don't have the good guy feds. You've got the bad guy Federal Imperium.
Yep.
And the Imperium, they use PFs right away. So they never use F-111s or A-20s. They go with PFs as soon as they're available. And so in that timeline, then you would need the SSDs for non-X and X-tenders to represent the ships that they're using instead of the F-111 or A-20 carriers that they're using, the good guy feds are using,
right,
in the regular timeline.
Right. Okay. Yeah, because the reason why I brought it up, I just wanted to know, and obviously you explained it to me quite well, which was, would there have been a need for the ship to begin with? And from the sounds of it, assuming that the Fed didn't go down the third way, basically they did what everyone else did, which is basically use PFs, that what will happen is that instead of new heavy fighter carriers and so forth, you'd have your PF tenders. Now, what brings back also the original question, what comes back to whether the ship actually would have been created, which is there currently a new heavy fighter carrier which is an X ship?
Well, there is a separate proposal where I ask for them to consider that. But I think the question would be, because I'll give you an example. That Romulan ship I mentioned, it was actually built before the Andromedan War. So, and the same thing with the Federation, the Colin Powell, like the version of the Galactic Survey Cruiser with F-111s.
Mm-hmm.
They were initially built to be raiding ships against other Alpha Empires. So it wasn't until after the Andromedan War that they basically became more important, because they realized how useful they'd be to go after the RTN.
Right.
But in contrast, there's an issue of Captain's Log where they offer... so you know the Federation battlecruiser, the one with the gun deck?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a variant of that ship in Captain's Log 48 where the weapons in the gun deck are replaced with special sensors. And the idea would have been that they could have then used that ship to go after satellite bases as well. But in that timeline, or in that version of events, it was an idea too late, basically, because they couldn't get their hands on a ship that was, because I mean the battlecruisers that were already in service by that point of the Andromedan War were too busy doing the missions that they were supposed to be doing. And the earliest that they could get one into the slipways, in theory they could have installed special sensors into it. Mm-hmm. But by then they were already making enough progress against the network that it was not needed. It was better, the admirals basically decided it was better to keep it in its original combat configuration.
Right.
Because what was still happening is that, like say for example, if a ship searching for the RTN, say if it finds a battle station, and if the battle station is too powerful to destroy by themselves, but it's also big enough that it's difficult for the Andromedans to pack it up and move it, then they would call for help, and then secondary squadrons would arrive at that spot and then destroy the base.
Mm-hmm.
So the battlecruisers would have been on standby for that secondary mission. So you're still using other ships to help clear up the network. So it's not entirely on the shoulders of the X-Raiders or on the X-Technology Galactic Survey Cruisers in the case of the Feds.
Right.
So, yes, I mean, that is a fair point. So it's possible to say that, and also a big conversion like that is more expensive, because like if you have a heavy war destroyer, if it becomes more important to use those heavy war destroyers as PF tenders or as heavy fighter carriers, you can send that heavy war destroyer to a starbase or it's a home dock or whatever, and you can remove the modules for whichever mission it has and put the PF tender or heavy fighter modules in instead and then send it on its way.
Right.
But if it's a line ship that's not a heavy war destroyer, you have to actually rip up part of the ship and convert it the old-fashioned way. And that is more expensive and more time-consuming, rather. So, yes, it's basically, it's likely that if the Federation, in this case, built sample X-technology heavy fighter carriers, maybe during the General War or something like that, and they had them on hand, then they could deploy them against the Andromedans. But you're right. Basically, if the concept of converting a pre-existing ship, and it has to be a pre-existing X ship, because you can't build an X technology new heavy cruiser out of an old new a pre-existing new heavy cruiser, because it doesn't have it can't handle the stresses of X technology travel.
Right.
So then you're in the question of saying, well, with all the other ships that the Feds have, do they need this ship, and do they need it timely enough a fashion to actually build it to use against the Andromedans? So,
right.
But
yes,
I mean, there's
that was the main point I was getting at, especially given that with the using the third way and the Galactic X ships, survey cruisers already providing the service using the F-11s, in which case they'd be switched out from F-11s to PFs themselves. There seems to be no reason to have the new, changing the new heavy fighter carrier to be an X ship.
The other thing too is that in Federation and Empire terms, there's an added cost to you. Okay, so each there's these things that they have called, like, I think PF operation groups or fighter operation groups. They're in the rules are in F&E advanced operations. But basically, there's an extra charge in APs that you have to pay. And of course, with an X ship, you actually have to pay a portion of it in these things called XTPs or X technology points. Mm-hmm. And so if you're converting an X technology heavy war destroyer from one variant to another, then you have to basically pay the cost of the PFs or the fighters. And then you pay a cost, I think it's one EP point to convert the modules. And then there's an extra bonus thing to create this quote-unquote operation group. So the question would be, is that process more expensive than a would-be building an X-technology new heavy cruiser-based carrier or PF tender would be? So, but I guess we'll have to wait and see what ADB think about it. But
yeah.
I basically just wanted to bring it up because I thought it'd be interesting, because it's a discussion that the other empires don't really need to worry about, because they already have move cost two-thirds X ships that work well as PF tenders for the most part. Some of them don't.
Right.
And also, for most other empires, their heavy war destroyer is not as good as their light cruiser. So you think about it. If you have, like, say, the IFC or the Romulans or the Gorn Salar, because a heavy war destroyer is a size class 4 ship, you can't install heavy plasma. So the plasma output of that ship is always going to be lower than the cruiser version of equivalent. But for the Federation, the Photon is the Photon. And their heavy war destroyer has 3 Photons instead of 2. So it's actually, if you compare the X-Tech heavy war destroyer to a would-be X-Tech heavy fighter carrier or PF tender, the Photon output is actually higher on the base hull for the heavy war destroyer. But it can't carry as many F-111s. It can carry the same number of PFs because you can convert the pre-existing tractor beams into PF mech links if you're using PFs.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not using PFs, you cannot convert the tractor beams to carry F-111s. So the most F-111s that the scout carrier can carry for the heavy war destroyer is 4. So the strike wing is actually weaker than it would be on the new heavy cruiser based scout carrier, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all these kind of like pluses and minuses that you have to try to deal with in terms of how you're going to approach the challenge of dealing with the rapid transit network. Or even before then, if you're basically arguing in favor of building a new X rating ship, would you be able to convince the bean counters to pay to build you a nice new X technology version of a F-111 or A-20 carrier? And when you do, how well would those ships work? Because like say, for example, if you build the A-20 carrier, the ship's energy budget for warp power has to also account for the fact that you're reloading the photons on the A-20s.
Right.
But if you get the F-111 carrier, you're stacking up on drones, but you don't have to pay warp power to rearm them.
Right.
So, but then you're not getting the same direct fire punch. So there's another question. Which would be the better ship to go after the Andromedans? Is it better to use the A-20s and have that photon punch? Or is it better to go with the heavier drone output from the F-111s?
Yeah, that's a tough one, especially because of it might be just the way you use the drones, you know, the tactics of the way you use drones that can make the difference. And having more drones, you can be a little more flexible in the tactics of how you actually launch them. You know, whether you have larger quantities in a smaller area, or spread them across a larger area and launch them that way, or launch them in waves. Or things like that, where it can make, drones give you the flexibility, though, as you pointed out, the A-20s have the photons, in which case they can get close enough, they can just kind of wreck an Andromeda, because Andromeda can do nothing to stop them except for killing the fighters themselves, which are a little bit harder to kill than a single individual drone.
The other thing is, I guess if an Andromedan base is using its temporal elevator, the further up the elevator it goes, the further the photons have to travel, and that means that your accuracy goes down.
Yeah, that's one thing I have to.
If you've got the drones, they just keep going.
Yeah, that's one thing I have to re up on again. It's been a while since I re up on the temporal elevator, and at that point, to be honest, that when I originally read about the temporal elevator, it was in the context of the Captain's Edition, in which case I'm not sure at that point why the weapon system was created at all, because it was supposed to be a way of defending against the plasma. But then they came up with the T-bombs.
The transcaptor mine.
The game is literally poster boy for the unintended consequences.
Yeah, the PA mines. The PA mines. That's what it is. That would absorb the actual energy from the the plasma themselves. You know, because the biggest problem with the temporal elevator is the cost. It's like a status field generator. The biggest issue with the status field generator is that the ever-increasing cost, and I forget exactly how much the cost of having the temple elevator, because you actually had to shift it, one, two, three, four, different levels to kind of increase the quote-unquote range. The range was based on, the range offset was based on the levels that the elevator went up. Or down, however you saw it. But as I said, I have to get back to reading. I have to reread that, because it's been, it's been easily like 15 years since I've read the rules on the temporal elevator. Because how often do I actually play an Andromedan that actually has a base? I don't. And whenever I play the Andromedans, and when it comes to regular fleet battles, and I'm not talking about tournament, we have the motherships, we have the satellite ships, we have scouts, but we don't have temporal elevators because we have no bases. So I never needed to reread the rules. So. Anyhow, I think it's time to shut it down for the evening. It's good that we actually got to talk about the Starfleet universe, and in this case, SFB. For those of you who are hoping to see the Starfleet Warlord demo, that will happen next week. I promise I'll have it all set up and all ready to roll. So, in that case, well, we already had Jeff already left, then Barry already left. I didn't know Barry left, but I didn't know Jeff left. But anyhow, Gary, nice that you logged in and said hello. You have a good night.
Thank you. And also, if anyone has any thoughts about the various Federation discussions, feel free to pop onto the BBS and add your contribution.
Or if you want to talk about the Tholians some more, that topic is still there. So
it sure is.
Yep. Okay. So you have a good night.
Have a good night, Evan.
Doug, my injured friend.
Thank you, Paul.
Yeah, you take care. You get yourself healed up and do the physical therapy that you're supposed to do.
Yeah. Well, hopefully I'll talk to you from home next week.
Yeah.
There's that.
Yeah, that'd be nice. And
thank you again.
Definitely when you get home, please tell me. See if we can work out home. See if we can work on getting the Discord set up.
Yeah, oh, that's fine. That's perfectly fine. I have to find my speakers. Not my kids' speakers.
Yeah. Understood.
I think that'll fix the problem right there.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you have a good night.
You too.
So, we actually got to discuss the Starfleet universe. Yay! Got a little talk about the Tholians again. Obviously, the one thing, reason why I'm sure Gary wanted to bring it up was because Barry is, I consider, our local Omega expert, because he knows about the weapons, all the Omega races, a heck of a lot better than I do, and I'm sure better than Barry does, Gary does, when it comes to what they can and cannot do, and energy requirements, and everything, how the weapons work, you know, because he likes playing them, so I think he's got a good idea of how they work and what would be the best weapon for the Tholians. I think, you know, Barry, his input would be greatly appreciated in that category. And obviously we got to talk about, you know, the Andromedans, and specifically some of the Federation ships, and how what ships they would have created, especially given that if the Federation did not go down the path of the Third Way. You know, because I agree, you know, that if the Federation didn't go down the Third Way, things would be looking a little different. To me, the funniest part for me is if you look at the Thunderbolts, which is what the Federation PFs are, you look at that, and it looks like, you know, a small version of a heavy cruiser. And if you really think about it, I mean, really think about it, do you think that the small PF would actually look like heavy cruiser? Honestly, personally, I don't think they would. I would think they might look like a new heavy cruiser, or a new light cruiser, you know, where you basically have the saucer section and then you have the cells attached to the saucer section directly. I think that is more likely of what it might look like. Possibly, you know, it might look a little different than that. It might just be look like an oversized fighter, you know, when it comes to the way that the PF would look for the Federation. Well, anyhow, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.